There's talk that Jay Crowder might wind up a Milwaukee Buck. There's also talk that OG Anunoby could be on his way to the Knicks, question mark? It's trade rumor season here on Locked On NBA.
You are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On NBA, your daily source for all things NBA from the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Thanks for making us your first listen. We appreciate you joining us on whatever platform you're choosing to join us, whether you're on Apple's podcast or Spotify or on YouTube, where you can join and find a live version of the show. My name is Matt Moore. I'm the senior NBA writer for the Action Network, co-host of Locked On Nuggets. His name is David Ramil. He's co-host of Locked On Heat. This is your Tuesday episode of Locked On NBA, where we're going to talk about today the OG Anunoby discussions, as there's new rumors that link the New York Knicks to OG, and I've got a few other teams that I think are in the running for OG, if that's a big if the Raptors decide to move him. Also, Milwaukee Bucks have received permission to talk to Jay Crowder, as that deal might be moving to conclusion. There's a few other Jay Crowder teams that are also out there. We'll talk about those as well. And in the final segment, we'll talk about what happened in the NBA on Monday night, including Luka Doncic's another phenomenal night scoring. The Sixers collapse right after their big win versus the Nuggets. And, well, the Kings, they light the beam again. We'll talk about all that and more on today's show. David, we'll begin with this. Shams Charania of The Athletic has reported the New York Knicks have at least been in discussions with the Raptors, along with a number of teams, about OG Anunoby. The idea of a framework would probably include multiple first-round picks. This one in particular, I will say, is like the Knicks make a lot of sense on a lot of levels here, and not just because they need the talent and it's a good upgrade next to Jalen Brunson, and it would obviously help them. The Knicks have a number of picks here that are technically first rounders, but they're heavily protected. So you're able to say, like, hey, we got like five. If let's say that they send like the three extra ones they picked up last offseason, and then they add in like their own picks. Now you're able to say like you give up four or five picks for Anunoby, when in reality, you're probably only going to give up like two. And that, I think, helps grease the wheels on this. The question, I think, is going to be whether or not the Raptors are going to demand Emmanuel Quickley, if they're going to demand OG Toppin, if they're going to want Julius Randle, or have Julius Randle shipped to a third team to get more assets. The asking price for Anunoby has been astronomical. Everybody I've talked to is just like, whew, it's steep just to get in the conversation. Now, it's come down from what I was told was like a Drew Holiday asking price back in December. But it does seem like of all the teams that have been mentioned, and the Suns have been mentioned with them as well, the Knicks make the most sense from a Anunoby can play the role that he wants, because he wants a bigger role. That's been out there for a while. He wants a bigger role in the offense on a main stage in New York next to Jalen Brunson on a premier team. This makes a lot of sense for both sides, I think. The Knicks would be, I think, a good fit to not only add Anunoby, but have the assets to trade for Anunoby without completely, you know, decimating their future cache of assets.
Yeah, no, that all makes sense. You know, talking to Sean Woodley of Locked On Raptors, he said, you know, maybe a little tad bit of homerism here, but said, you know, 30 teams could use a player like OG and Anunoby. So I know he's been greatly valued. Look, he's young, 25 and a half, more or less, shooting 36% from three. But I get to the point now, you know, the discussions have been ramped up so much over the last few weeks that I'm starting to feel like, are we overvaluing what he can bring to the table here? Like, I know that I like the fit in New York, right? They continue to build on a strong defense. He does provide a little bit outside scoring. And I guess the theory is that eventually he'd be, with this expanded role that you mentioned, maybe he'd be able to be a little bit more active in creating his own shot off the dribble, something that he just wasn't really able to do much over his first few seasons in Toronto. But are we getting to the point now where is this all just smokescreen, or is this Toronto, who again hasn't even officially put him out there from ever all the reporting involved, that they're just kind of trying to drive up the price as much as possible, have 28, 29 other teams compete against one another in the hopes of getting as much of a haul back if they do eventually decide to trade Anunoby. I don't know. It just seems like a little excessive for a player who, you know, he's not an all-star level player. The trade market seemed like it had kind of returned back to normal after Minnesota skewed things considerably in acquiring Rudy Gobert, and now all of a sudden we're back to square one again, where we were over the summer. We're sending these players that are fine, good players for an incredible haul in exchange. I don't know, two draft picks, maybe even a third draft pick or a theoretical draft pick, plus some good young players, maybe Cam Reddish, Obi Toppin, something along those lines. It seems like a lot for a player of an NBA skill set. I mean, maybe I'm mistaken here. I happen to like him, and I've talked him up a lot on Locked On Heat too, because I think he's a good fit in Miami. No surprise there. But at the same time, I just wonder if we're overvaluing what he can bring to the table.
Yeah, some details on those Knicks picks before we kind of get into like whether he's worth it or not. They've got Dallas's first round pick. It's protected for 1-10 in 2023, 1-10 in 2024, and 1-10 in 2025. So like they could send that one. They've got a 2023 first rounder from Detroit that's protected 1-18. That's going to be protected this year, obviously. 1-8 next year. So like it could conceivably convey next season and with a pretty good value there. They've got Washington's 2023, and that one's selected. That's lottery protected in 2023. That will likely not convey. 1-12 next year, then just 1-10 in 2025. You might be able to get a pretty good pick in 2025 with that. So these are picks that like you're not giving up like three first rounders in next year's draft. You're not like these may wind up being like down the line 18, 19, 20-ish picks. I am with you in that I think OG has been a little bit overrated for the last couple of years. Like he is a hoop nerd guy. Like all of the hoop nerds love him. And those, being a hoop nerd, I tend to be the guy that would appreciate him. I will say he's been in my top five for the best defenders in the league this season. Like he has been above and beyond where he's even been in the last couple of seasons. But offensively, a lot of this for me, my concern is that what I've heard is that OG wants to be a bigger part of an offense and have the ball in his hands more and be more of a star. And I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, I think like third wheel is probably like a good fit for you. Like, you know, you being like the third guy behind like when he was like Lowry and Pascal Siakam, and then you, that was like a good fit when it was Kawhi and Siakam, and then Lowry, and then you. Or you could say you were on the same level as Lowry then. That worked, but I get worried about going further. I think that Sean's right in that wings that can defend at his level with his length and age that can shoot are the premium asset in the NBA. They're not the hardest to find, but they are the most valued asset in terms of like, there's a lot of them, but everybody wants as many as they can get. Like you could never have enough wings. I wrote about an action this week about how point guard and center are the two center positions that are hardest to find guys for right now. And that's why the demand on those guys is high. The other thing I would say is if a deal happens with Toronto and the Phoenix Suns are another mentioned in talks as well, it's not going to happen until really close to the deadline. What I've heard is that you talked about like smoke screens. Like, yeah, like they're driving up the price. They're going to get as much noise as possible. And then they'll I think in the last 24 hours before the deadline, they'll say, do these deals make sense for us? And I do not think they'll pick which deal. I think it's entirely possible that OG Anunoby is a Toronto Raptor after the deadline. I think it's entirely possible that Fred VanVleet, who I reported this week has interest from the Suns, the Clippers, and I can also add the Magic to that list. The Magic have real interest in Fred VanVleet. I think it's possible that despite that interest, the Raptors keep him because they had this exact same situation. You remember with the Miami Heat and Kyle Lowry, where Lowry was older, but he was entering into it. He wanted another contract, had a player option, was probably going to leave for Miami. They didn't come to a deal. The Raptors kept him and he left in free agency for nothing. And like, there was no real like big ding on the Raptors. Was there a sign and trade in that one?
There was. That was for Goran Dragic and Precious Achiuwa, who continues to impress Raptors fans, despite Heat fans and myself included, not being all that impressed with Achiuwa when he was in Miami.
MT in the comments here on the live show says, Nick Nurse said in an interview that he was, quote, very surprised OG is ruled out for the rest of the road trip. Am I crazy for thinking this confirms he's definitely on the move? You're close. you don't play him this close to possibly right. trading him. It's just like, let's keep him back in the shed in case, like, we don't want to bring him out and we don't want to take that car for a drive and then have it hail. Like,
he's actually hurt, but you don't want him to get hurt even yeah. further when you're this close to potentially getting a haul of mm-hmm. picks and players in exchange for him. So
right.
yeah, you're right on the money there.
Another name that's been mentioned a lot in trade talks is Jay Crowder. We got an update on him and we'll get to that after the break here on Locked On NBA. But first, I need to tell you about FanDuel Sportsbook. We're really excited about our new sports betting partner for Locked On because they're the number one sports book in America, FanDuel. This year, the only app you need at your Super Bowl party is FanDuel, America's number one sports book. If you're new to FanDuel, it's even better. They've got so many great features that make betting sports fun and easy. Download FanDuel now and so you can bet Super Bowl 57 with a no-sweat first bet. You'll get up to $3,000 back in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. FanDuel lets you bet on everything from the money line to point spreads to who will score a touchdown. Kansas City guy here. Just going to go ahead and say, I understand why the Chiefs are dogs. I'm just saying it's probably not a good idea. Who's the better quarterback? I would just tell you to. Who's the better? Like, I'm probably going to have money on the Eagles because I have a Chiefs future. But, like, who's the better quarterback here? Jalen have a great season. Nice season for Jalen. Really good season. Who's the better quarterback here? FanDuel Sportsbook app is safe, secure, and super easy to use. Best of all, you get all your winnings instantly. So join FanDuel today at FanDuel.com/LockedOn to claim your no-sweat first bet on Super Bowl 57. That's FanDuel.com/LockedOn. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner of the NFL. We'll be right back on Locked On NBA. Back here on Locked On NBA, thanks for joining us and making this part of your day. Appreciate you guys being with us. Matt Moore alongside David Ramil. Let's talk about Jay Crowder. So on Monday, the news was the Bucks have received permission to talk to Jay Crowder. They're going to talk to him and they can actually like say like, hey, what do you think about your role? What do you think about the fit? But honestly, that's not the big deal here. The bigger deal here is the Bucks are going to ask him, how much do you want for your extension? That's the bigger deal here, because the reason Jay Crowder's not playing in Phoenix is he wants the extension and the Suns weren't going to give it to him. And so he continues to sit out. It has been, I would say, a bit of a depressing turn for Jay Crowder, who probably thought that a lot of teams would want him. And David, credit to you for saying, like, why is there all this talk about Jay Crowder? Like, you've been on that when we've talked about it before. Now, like, I think Crowder is the kind of player that can wind up, you know, tilting a playoff series, because I've seen guys like Deshaun Stevenson do it. And Jay Crowder is a better player than Deshaun Stevenson.
That's fair.
But I also think that, like, the market has agreed with your assessment. I reported this week that Coby White is a name that's been mentioned. Like, when it's Coby White is the name that you're hearing in connection with these talks, like, that's a warning sign. The Bucks have made the most sense. They were very close to getting a deal done all the way back in late November, early December. That deal was like at the finish line. The Rockets pulled out because they could not get the draft compensation that they wanted, because the Rockets, I think, have unrealistic expectations about Eric Gordon. So, like, the deal continues to kind of be bandied back and forth, and it makes sense that the Suns and Bucks have been slowly kind of working towards this. I would say that, like, the Bucks have to be the odds-on favorite, given that they are actively speaking to Crowder, but they're not the only team that's been out there. I'll tell you that the Portland Trailblazers have interest. The Chicago Bulls, which is the weirdest one, I'm like, guys, of all of the things that you can do, adding Jay Crowder is probably not one of them. Like, this is not going to put you over the top, Chicago Bulls. You either need to make a big swing, or you need to start moving towards a different iteration, but not this. And I'll also say, David, I've heard that the Miami Heat have also kicked the tires on that deal as well, which makes sense. I would say that the Heat have probably kicked the tires on a lot of vehicles around the yard. So beyond your general assessment that, like, why are we doing all that? Why is Jay Crowder getting all this attention? I think the biggest question right now is just, the Bucks have played a lot better the last 2 weeks. They have been absolutely been insane. Giannis had 48 in 30 minutes yesterday. That was crazy.
Yeah,
they've been lights out. The offense has kicked it up. It looks like the Bucks are getting ready to go on a stretch run. Do you think that he makes a difference for them?
No, I don't. I like Jay. I don't want to seem like I'm being overly critical of him. And you know, he's always been a player who seems to take his game up to another level when he's playing for something that actually matters. And he played pretty well in his half season with Miami. I remember writing about him back when he was with the Celtics and always thinking, you know, this is a player that makes a lot of sense, not just for Miami, but for a lot of teams around the league. He was right in that same model, kind of the same way that we're talking about Nunnaby nowadays. He was a 3-and-D type wing who could guard bigger players. He's switchable, etc. He was a nice fit, always a hard worker. It's great to have a guy like that in the locker room who's so committed to winning, you know, but at the same time, he's also always been interested in the stability that a long-term contract brings. I remember when he was in Miami right before free agency hit, he talked about the stability of another contract. That was his biggest goal, which makes a lot of sense because he was traded for the same deal from Dallas to Boston to Cleveland to Utah to Memphis to Miami. So a six teams under that one contract. And that's why you want that kind of stability, especially around the NBA. I just don't see how exactly he fits in. He wanted a bigger role in Phoenix. He wanted an extension. If the Bucks are willing to pay him, and I don't know that they have that kind of money that they can commit to a player of Crowder's skill set right now either. Like, they're committing a lot of money. I mean, I think that changes things with their other free agents down the road. I don't know that they want to commit money to an older Jay Crowder. He's going to be coming off the bench too, right? So I just don't know exactly what the end game here is, other than to say, let's get another veteran player in case something happens to Chris Middleton and or Brook Lopez and they get hurt or we have to cut their minutes to some degree and we can get a guy who's proven, who's been in the playoffs, who's been to the finals, et cetera, and maybe get him to contribute a little bit more than, you know, whatever we currently have on the roster. But I just don't see them getting – look, they're a really good team. I don't see them getting any better because of Crowder. He just provides some depth and a little bit more insurance in case one of their current players – breaks down due to injury, but that's not the kind of deal that he wants. He doesn't want to just be a short-term rental. He wants to be part of something for at least a couple more seasons beyond this one, and I don't know why the Bucks would commit that kind of time to him.
Yeah, and I think what this may wind up happening is the Suns miss this entire year of Crowder when they could have used him, especially when they were hurt.
Yeah.
And he winds up still not getting the kind of money that he wants. Like, that seems like the most likely situation here, because like, he gambled on somebody's going to want me, and nobody was like, oh yeah, no, we'll send you like a good player and a first round pick for Jay. Everyone's kind of like, you know, I mean, this is what we're talking about. Like, the list of guys being mentioned with the Bucks are, it is not like an incredible
George Hill, right?
Yeah. It's George Hill, Jordan Nwora, Serge Ibaka, who is away from the team in a similar type of deal, and right. Second round draft pick compensation. Like, that is like the, like, they're not even sending Grayson Allen out in that deal. And that's been their right. Trade chip. Like, the Bucks have made Grayson Allen in talks for weeks, and they're not even sending Grayson Allen out in this deal. So yet, you know, maybe the Suns squeeze them, but I do think it's kind of illustrative of where Jay's at heading into the situation, which that might provide an opportunity here for somebody to buy low on him. I know that most Miami fans are going to be like, please God, no, please don't commit more money to a veteran. Please don't do this. It does kind of seem like a Miami move though, right? Like a very win now. No, we can just like, we're good enough. If we could just get a little bit better, we can make a run. That's like a very Pat Riley-ish move, even if it's not an Andy Ellisberg or an Adam Simon move, right?
I agree. No, I think the ideal situation for Miami would be for Jay to have been bought out either now or after the trade deadline passes, and then to bring him back. You know, again, he has ties to South Florida. He played here already. So there's a comfort level. Went to Marquette alongside Jimmy Butler too. So it makes a lot of sense in many ways. You can bring Caleb Martin off the bench where he's probably going to be more effective, because right now he's starting to break down due to injury a little bit. He's missed some games recently. And we talked about this in today's episode of Lockdown Heat. For a guy who was known as a high flyer last season and was incredible at attacking the rim, he's only had 12 dunks all season, and it seems like he's probably saving a lot of the energy because he has to expend so much of it as a two-way player guarding much bigger players in that switch-heavy defense of Miami's. And so if you can shift Caleb back to the bench and start Jay, which is the bigger role that he wanted, now all of a sudden you can platoon the two of them. You get a lot more depth. You got the idea of three-point shooting between the two of them and a little mix of switchability, size, and Crowder, and a little bit more athleticism in Caleb Martin. And you can preserve him for the playoffs where he might be a little bit more effective than he was last season with the Heat.
All right, let's talk about some games. We've talked about all the rumors and the suggestions and the smoke and all of that. Let's get to actually what happened on the court on Monday night. We'll talk about that when we come back here on Locked On NBA. Thanks for making Locked On NBA your first listen. Make sure that you check out Game to Game on the same feed, NBA. Every moment, every top performance, every result, Locked On Game to Game covers every game from across the NBA with local analysis that only Locked On can deliver. Follow Game to Game on this very feed, Locked On NBA, available on the Odyssey app, YouTube, and wherever you get podcasts. All right, so we're actually going to talk about some of the games here tonight. Let's go over this real quickly. The Mavs won. That's good. And Luka was phenomenal. Luka was incredible in this game. He put the work on the Detroit Pistons. Needing 53 from Luka Doncic to beat Detroit at home is not exactly what you want to see. Luka finishes with 53 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists, 4 turnovers, and a plus 8 in the win over the Pistons. They trailed for most of this game and then kind of finally got control of it in the second half. Look, they miss Christian Wood. Like, that's just pretty obvious that they don't, without Maxi Kleber and Christian Wood, they just don't have enough scoring from the front court. And that's been a consistent issue. You know, they're not getting a lot of scoring from honestly anybody. Like, Tim Hardaway Jr. is 3-10 in this game. It really is like just Luka. But to me, it is just like, it's awesome that Luka's able to make your team this good. It's awesome that Luka's able to put in 50 whenever you need it. But they got to get to a point where they're not needing 53 points from Luka Doncic to beat the Detroit Pistons at home. And it's like, I don't mind it every now and again, but this is like every game with them, David, where it's like, If Luka's not amazing, they lose.
It's exhausting from Mavs fan perspective. It's exhausting from Doncic, although I'm sure he loves the ability to be productive like this and to be able to dominate and continue to make a strong case as one of the best players in the league, if not an MVP type candidate. And at the same time, you look, you know, again, we're a few days away from the trade deadline. And I don't know that there's a team that needs to make a move more than Dallas Mavericks for no other reason to show Luka, we're committed to you. We're committed to winning. We want to build the best team around you. You don't want to burn your best player out this quickly. Like, that's not the way to build a solid team. And I know that they made some ancillary moves and they thought they were going to be able to tweak things here and there. You were going to get more production out of player X. And that just hasn't been the case. You've got Luka and you need to do something a little bit more. And this is what, you know, other teams are talking about trades. You all hope that you could get a player as good as Luka Doncic on your roster at some point. And so few teams do. And you want to be able to commit as many resources as possible to building the best team now, because these windows get shorter and shorter with every passing game. And another 58-point effort is only driving him further and out the door. And look, I know a lot of teams would love to be able to scoop Doncic away from Dallas if that's what it takes. But this is, you know, this is a gamble that the Mavericks front office is taking. And they're going to lose if they don't acquire a player of considerable, and I don't know that they have the assets. You would know more about it from the reporting side of it if they're actively engaged in upgrading their roster, but they have to do something, make a splash of some kind in order to appease Luka.
There's been some talk about DFS. Like, I know
that. Yeah, I heard that.
Well, okay. So here's how that one went. My understanding is that the Jazz went to them and were like, hey, we'll give you Beasley, Vanderbilt, one of their other expirings, and a first for.
It's not a bad deal.
Yeah, for DFS. And Dallas said no, which which I actually understand, because like I wouldn't trade DFS unless I was getting like a significant upgrade. I wouldn't do it for depth. I wouldn't do it for movable pieces. And I wouldn't do it if I'm like the biggest, like that move is basically, hey, you get to clear your cap space. Like, you cannot re-sign Malik Beasley. You cannot re-sign Jared Vanderbilt, and you can clear that cap space off. And then you'll have like free agency money in the summer. I think that's kind of the debate that the Mavericks are in right now. Cause I have heard like they've explored just clearing cap space, like moving Tim Hardaway Jr. to just clear cap, which makes a lot of sense to me in terms of just like trying to get as much stuff out the door as possible to be like, look, this is not our year. We need a major upgrade. We're going to go shopping this summer. They've just never really had success in free agency. So I think it's like, we'll see what they do. I do want to mention, just as to talk about how awesome Luka is, he was 12 of 13 from 2-point range tonight. Like, he was bullying dudes. It was amazing.
Pretty good.
It was incredible. Elsewhere in the association, the Philadelphia 76ers had probably their best feel-good win over the weekend. They beat the Denver Nuggets on Saturday. Prolific performance from Joel Embiid. He hit every mid-range shot. It was an incredible performance. Many have said that they believe that he is now the front runner for MVP, because we shouldn't overreact to one game, but we do. And so, like, that's like it was a monster game. They adjusted the rotation. They changed where Embiid came in and out to make sure that he played against the bench unit. They switched up PJ Tucker onto Jokic, like all these tactical adjustments. It was like really impressive. It was a really like, I am not degrading it at all because I want NBA teams to do this more. I like it when NBA teams are like, we really want to win this regular season game. Right. It was very clear. The Sixers wanted to win that game. The Eagles won on Sunday, and there may have been some enjoyment on the streets of Philadelphia, and awesome. The Sixers may or may not have partaken in such events.
Who knows? But
regardless of how it happened, the Orlando Magic, after being 19 down in the first half.
21. Sixth largest comeback in Magic history. I can't believe it.
119-109. They won by double digits over the Philadelphia 76ers. The Sixers absolutely collapsed down the stretch. Mo Wagner took it.
Yes.
Joel Embiid.
Talking about overreacting, Wagner for MVP. He's a better player than Joel Embiid at this point. At least he showed it in the fourth quarter. I mean, look, that's where, you know, we talked about this in terms of all the parity around the league and everything like that. There's no powerhouse in the Eastern Conference. And I know it's just one game and coming off a big win against Denver. But you look at this Magic team collapsing that way and Joel hunting for fouls and crying about fouls and not getting foul calls and not playing defense because he's too busy complaining to referees about not getting the foul call. It's like, this is your Eastern Conference finalist team. This is your team that's going to go all the way and win a championship. I just don't see it. And look, every team has weaknesses. And as strong as the Sixers have looked coming off a 7-game win streak, they looked really bad out there today against a plucky team that was down 21. There's not enough pluckiness to overcome a 21-point deficit. Something was wrong with the Sixers side of it. Not to take any credit away from the Magic necessarily, but you can't be down by that larger deficit and not have, you know, played a significant role in allowing that comeback to happen in the first place.
Paolo Banchero was awesome in this game. Good. He was so great in this game. That kid's amazing. 29 points, 10 rebounds, which rebounding has been something he's slacked off on lately. A plus 15 for Paolo in the win. The Orlando Magic need just 8 wins to go over their closing season win total line of 27.5. There's good things brewing in Orlando. And as I mentioned, they're shopping. They're trying to be a buyer at the deadline, which I think is a really nice move to see a team in their spot.
Yeah, I like the Fred VanVleet discussion. What would that entail, though? Like, are you moving Cole Anthony? Like, who are you trading away in order to acquire a guy like Fred on that? I know there's a tie there between the Magic front office, former Raptors GM, I think, was it? So I guess I could see why that would make a lot of sense. But, I mean, what are you giving up on the Magic side in order to acquire a player like VanVleet?
That I wish I knew. I don't have any details on, like, what the return offer is. But I think that there's probably – here's the thing. They're not looking to get, like, top-end return for FVV. Because like their alternatives are the Clippers, who don't have much,
right?
And can't offer that much. There's a couple of other, unless the Suns are another team. Like there's a number of teams that are like in this discussion. None of them are in like a great spot. Orlando, on the other hand, I think like they could be like, hey, we have some promising young guys and we've got decent draft compensation. So
I love it. If they can get a player like Fred with championship experience, you know, stabilized right there, you've got Terrence Ross as your spokesperson, your older veteran. I mean, T. Ross is a fine person and a fine player and everything else like that, but he's not Fred VanVleet. Like, he would add so much cohesion and just get everybody to commit at another level. Like, you need to start. This is the difference between what we've talked about with Houston, not to knock the Rockets or anything like that, but you have to have like an actual veteran that contributes and plays and can command that locker room and get him steered in the right direction. So if they can pull off a move like that, I applaud it 100%. I don't think you're competing for the play-in tournament this season, but next year you might be a much more dangerous team than a lot of people expect.
Everyone says I hate their team. It's actually David. David's the one that actually hates.
That's right. Yeah, I hate every team. Sorry.
Best game on the slate tonight was Kings Wolves. It was a lot of fun. It was just a really phenomenal game. Kings got out to a big lead. The Wolves got really rattled by how fast the Kings play. Like, they were just missing shots at the rim on like trying to, you can't play pickup with the Kings. And then the Wolves really settled down and built a lead, but then the Kings rallied back in the fourth quarter, were able to force, like, they had the lead, then the Wolves force overtime, and then the Kings in overtime get it done 118-111. This was just like a really fun statistical and like tactical matchup. It was really a lot of fun to watch. De'Aaron Fox with 32, he was able to just absolutely slice up the interior in transition for the Wolves, constantly got them back on their heels. I thought Anthony Edwards, who was 14 to 27 from the field for 33 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists, was incredible down the stretch in the fourth quarter. He put in a really good game, and they just didn't have enough in overtime. Rudy Gobert, they went small in the fourth quarter, and again, Rudy Gobert had some problems in that situation. Same old story. And Gobert took responsibility for it. Like, there's things they could have done better, but it really kind of caused them problems when the Kings went small in that fourth. Domas Sabonis, just 17 points on 7 to 10 shooting. 13 boards, though, for Sabonis in this one. I thought that Keegan Murray gave them good minutes. This Kings team just continues to be really impressive. I think this team might win the division, David. I think they're going to win the division. Like, they're just finding ways to get enough wins.
I'm in shock. Like, you have made, I know you don't like every team in the NBA, but man, the Kings, that you have always made fun of the Kings. And look, deservedly so.
You're
a believer, though.
But
you're a believer this year.
But here's the thing. Here's the great example about it, okay? Is like, it doesn't really matter the process for how they got here.
Yeah.
They're a good example of, if you really put the resources towards just making the playoffs, you can do it. It's the gap between making the playoffs and making a run in the playoffs, and balancing that with being able to do it over multiple years, because you're not going to just have everything fall into your lap. Like, that's the complicated part of this. But the Kings, I love the Kings' approach this year, because they were just like, look, we have been out of the playoffs the most in sports history right now. Current sports history, we have the longest drought. We got to get in the playoffs. Like, we just need to make the playoffs. And winning changes the vibe, and I think that matters. And Sabonis is playing great, and Fox is playing great, and everyone, like, what a great story Mike Brown is. And they're still developing the young guys, like Davion Mitchell and Keegan Murray. Like, they're getting these young guys. Like, Trey Lyles is
revitalized.
Yeah, it's awesome. Like, it's a feel good story. They're not going to win a title, but I like the fact that the Kings did this, and I do think it's proof that, like, look, all these teams are like, well, we just can't make the play. No, like, if your owner commits to it, you can make the playoffs, because that's what the Kings did.
Do you think this is the start of something big? Not dynastic or anything like that, but do you think they could sustain this beyond this season? It's not just catching teams by surprise? Because I think it's more sustainable.
I don't know who on their roster is going to become a top five guy. And that's what you need to make runs, is you need a top 10 guy at least.
If you had to guess, who is it? Sabonis or Fox?
Keegan Murray. I like Murray a lot. Sabonis. Probably Sabonis is the best bet there. So, they've got a lot of trade chips. If they can if they can build this and then cash in everything that they have, if a star comes available, don't do it for Bradley Beal. I'm begging you, do not do it for Bradley Beal. But like,
you mentioned chips. Sorry, as a total aside here, did you see about Anthony Edwards being hot fries and eating 3 bags of those a day? A Bleacher Report post on Instagram saying that he eats 21 bags of hot fries a week.
To be in your young 20s.
That'll catch up, man. That'll catch up to you. Don't do it, brother. Put them down.
Yeah, when that catches, it's going to be bad. All right, that's going to wrap it up for Locked On NBA. Thanks for joining us. You can follow David on Twitter at DRamel13. I'm on Twitter at HB Basketball. You can follow the show at Locked On NBA. Locked On NBA Pods. Check back tomorrow. Jake Madison and John Corrales will be with you tomorrow for the show, as I'm sure there'll be more trade rumors as we head into the stretch before the All-Star break. Make sure to rate, review, and subscribe. Thanks for joining us, everybody. We'll see you guys again next time on Locked On NBA.